the OTB Podcast Network.
Just to get into this, Neil Tracy promises big stuff on yesterday's show. He was like, no, I'm not answering your questions. I'm keeping it. I'm keeping my money stuff for the Type 5. So here we are. Neil, I have very high expectations for this week's Type 5. I'm not going to lie.
Ooh, yeah, we'll get to that one in a little bit. That was the Captain's Challenge stuff, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, I do have to warn you, that is... I've gone into detail on it, but on the flip side of it, it also means that it's likely to be extremely boring for some people. I'm
No. This is where we are unleashing your inner rugby nerd, and we're all for it.
I'm going through laws and subsections in this. It's going to be insanely boring. So strap yourself in.
You're a barrister. You're a frustrated barrister there, Neil, when it comes to this stuff.
Well, look, let's get right into it. So we're starting off talking about a good bit of maul defence and a good bit of maul line-out and maul attack before we get to the captain's challenge stuff. So what we're going to look at first is some really, really good maul defence from Munster. This was at a really, really important time of the game as well. But as you can see on the clock there on the screen that's up there, 46 minutes played. It's 10-3 at the moment. Leinster, what, 5, 6, 7 metres out from the Munster line. A try here, and if they can convert it, you're talking 10-all. And it is a very, very different second half. So this first picture, we're just going to get a sense of what kind of line-out Leinster have. 7-man line-out called by Leinster. And you can see the way they're spaced out. A pot of 3 at the front, then a final space to Ryan Baird, another fine space to Ross Maloney, and then another fine space to James Ryan and Andrew Porter, who are at the back. So obviously they're trying to, you know, spread out the numbers and show off different options that are available. But what Munster are doing, they've pretty much stacked their players towards the tail of the line-out. They don't really mind if the ball goes up towards the front, because if it does go up at the front, they're going to charge all those players from the tail of the line-out back up towards the front and try push it out over the sideline. But as you can see, I have numbered there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That are 6 Munster players pretty much in the second half of the line-out, and they only have Stephen Archer up towards the front. So they're pretty much preparing themselves for the fact that Leinster are going to be throwing the ball somewhere in the region of the middle or the tail of the line-out, and they want to be ready to set up a maul. So we're going to move on to our next clip, number 2. And as we can see, Leinster throw the ball up to Ross Maloney towards the tail of middle or tail of the line-out. So Ross Maloney is up in the air at the moment, and you can see these 3 players looping around. So that's Dan Sheehan, Josh Murphy and Ed Byrne. So they're all taking a big arc to kind of come around from their early position and set up a maul, and probably running in a way as well that they are coming back infield, because they ultimately want that maul to start drifting back infield and start moving in towards the posts and away from the touchline. But if you look at the red arrow, this is really important well over the next couple of clips. So in the red arrow, you can see Ryan Baird. He's lifting Ross Maloney at the front. Now, you can see the way he's lifting Maloney up. He's kind of drifted. Maloney has kind of drifted away from him. So if you put the camera back onto me there for just a second, the way he's lifting, he's kind of, I'll turn to the side here, he's kind of lifting up and out like that. So his arms are at an angle as opposed to lifting straight up. So when he's lifted him, he's kind of ended up pushing him out a little bit. And that's going to create a little bit of separation, as we can see in our next clip, the third one. So yeah, this is the point that Ross Maloney has landed. And you can even see there as he's landing, the distance between him and Baird has kind of got greater, and he's kind of landing at an awkward angle. He's kind of falling backwards as he lands. Now, he lands on his feet and he's able to set up the maul. But that little gap there in the red circle, what's happening there is normally you would want to be bringing the jumper down alongside him so you can get straight in and protect him at that front line of the maul. But he's just left a little small window between himself and Ross Maloney, so that in a couple of seconds, Peter O'Mahony basically is going to get up the far side of this maul and kind of split himself into that gap and kind of take Ryan Baird out of it a little bit, like just kind of like disrupt him basically. And it means Baird isn't really contributing as much power into the maul, essentially. So he's left that small.
Can I just ask in the middle of that? So this is, we're going to see the end result, right? But the genesis of the end is right here, right now. That there's a slight inaccuracy there. Can you diagnose the cause of the inaccuracy? Is it having to reach for the throw? Is it because the lift it just wasn't perfect? Is it as simple as that? Next time they're sitting, it's Tuesday morning. They're sitting, it's Tuesday, and they're like, here, you know, you're lifting in the wrong direction. That's the diagnosis, is it?
Yeah, basically, he just kind of, like a lot of teams, what you're probably trying to do, but as you're lifting, you're lifting them up, but you're also kind of like coming across a little bit, because you want to kind of lift them up and into that space. And so what he's ended up doing is they've probably just kind of pushed Maloney off a little bit too far. So Ryan is below him, so he's lifting from behind, so he's obviously able to stay underneath him. But with Ryan Baird, he's kind of ended up, he's just kind of got out of reach a little bit from him and got away. A little gap, and that's enough for Peter Romani to get in. And it just means Ryan Baird isn't able to contribute as much power into the mall. And also then at the back, I have those three Munster players circled, because you can see they're, you know, they haven't thrown up a jumper. They've just stayed down. They're waiting for this mall. And they're waiting at that side of the mall as well, because they want to start pushing back infield to try get, or back outfield to try send that mall towards the touchline. So if we move on to our next clip again, mall is set up. So we can see the red circle that's at the back of the mall. That is just Leinster hooker Dan Sheehan. Ball is in that position. It's safely at the back. It's all looking fine from their point of view. You can see the yellow circle just above that. That's Peter O'Mahony, who's managed to kind of just wedge himself in there into that front line of the Leinster mall. And he's kind of working away on Ryan Baird, trying to just kind of... All you're kind of doing in that situation is you're wriggling around, looking for body position, trying to just disrupt anything you possibly can. And then there are two yellow arrows, which we're looking at. The first one, which is the straight arrow, that is that's one of the Munster players, as we were kind of saying, just driving back in towards the touchline, trying to push it out. But crucially, the crucial man to disrupt all of this is Jean Klein, who has the yellow arrow above his head. Now, what's happened here is he was obviously involved in the early stages of the mall, and he kind of got drifted out of it. So he's come out of the mall and he's trying to put himself back in. Now, what I would do, what a lazy rugby player would do, is you get up and you just, you know, you run in and you just hit the first part of the mall that you can see. Not John Klein, though. He's a smart fella, because what he's doing is he's going to take a big arcing run and come back around to the far side and start driving back in field. Or I keep saying back in field, back in towards the touchline. So he's, you know, he's smart enough to realise that this ball has to go one way. If I just come in and hit the first thing that I see, it's going to go back in field and Leinster have the advantage. If we roll it on again, we can see this is the point that he's hit. So he is that arrow there with the kind of small little bend at the hips and then to the legs. And it's a pity now we can't play the video here, because the video would show just how big of an impact his hit is having on this mall. As wow. soon as he gets himself into it, it's absolutely brilliant work by him. It really, really is. As soon as he hits into that mall, it starts drifting out towards that touchline again and starts going out. You can see then again the yellow arrow. That's Peter O'Mahony. I'm just going to keep highlighting him as we're going on these slides as well, just to show how he's kind of worked himself up and is wriggling himself around there and creating a nuisance in the mall. And then in the red circle again, it's still Dan Sheehan, still has the ball at the back at the tail end of the mall as well. So while Munster are disrupting it and getting it back out towards the touchline, Leinster, in fairness, do still have control of the ball, which is ultimately all right. And then we move on to our next little slide. We can see this is it when it's really starting to move. You've got all those three Munster players working together, driving parallel to each other, and they're sending it out towards the touchline. Peter O'Mahony, again, he's moved himself up. He just keeps pushing along. He's circled, he's drifting up the side. It almost looks like he's kind of offside, but he's actually fine. The referee at this moment is actually telling him to, do you know the way you'd hear it regularly now these days, where the referee would say, you know, keep your current bind, maintain your bind, don't change your bind.
Yeah.
So referee is giving him that instruction at this, pretty much this exact moment, saying, you're all right where you are, but you have to basically stay where you are. And he does do that. He just kind of stays on Ryan Baird. And in the end, momentum just brings the Leinster Mall down to the ground, kind of through their own momentum rather than anything Munster do, because at this stage, Munster are actually getting it towards the touchline. It goes to the ground. They are able to recycle the ball because Dan Sheehan has kept it well out and well protected. But within two, three phases, Munster win a jackal penalty and are able to clear the line. So it's just a really, really important piece of mall defence there at a time when Leinster, a try for them at that stage, and it was a very, very different game.
Well, a try for them, and all of the nightmares of the previous six wins for Leinster, suddenly the ghosts of those are made real again. Number two on the Tide 5 this week is Munster's clever line-out move to set up a mall.
Yeah, and it actually sets up their third try, the penalty try, in the last 10 minutes of the game here. Nothing revolutionary, but just a well-executed example of a good old classic of the genre. So they kick a corner to the penalty, and if we put up our first slide here, what they actually do is call a nine-man maul, or nine-man line-out, nine players in the line-out. So what we're going to look at specifically is, as we can see, we've numbered them all. If you look at the gap between numbers 4 and 6, so that's between Kenyon Knox and Gavin Coombs. And then if we look at number 5, well, that is Tadhg Byrne, he's actually making his way up to the line slower than everyone else. He's walking very slowly, very deliberately, because what he wants to do is, well, what a lot of teams will do is they want to literally be going up into the air as they step into the lineout. So you're walking up to the lineout, and as soon as you get there, you're jumping up and you're setting it up, because you don't want the opposition to be there looking at you and marking yourself out. Now, he's making himself a very, very obvious candidate to be going up into the air by the way he's walking up to the lineout, but he doesn't actually do it. So four or five people with the important jobs in the next couple of slides. So we go to our second one. Now, before we actually look at any markings here, I want the two of you to look at this. Tell me, what's strange about what you see here?
The first yellow circle is facing the wrong way.
No, forget about the circles I've drawn even. I haven't even circled this one.
What's strange is that number 15?
It is. That is Mike Haley.
Wow.
By Damien De Allende as well. Damien De Allende lifting at the front, lifting his full back, Haley.
How do those conversations go in training? Here, listen, little man. We're going to be throwing you up in the air like a rag doll. He's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I'm brave.
So, yeah, that's the first part of it. Just a good bit of fun. You know, you've got Mike Haley and Damien De Allende up at the front of the lineout. But the arrow, importantly, then, is on Tadhg Byrne. Because what he's done is he's just held himself. You can kind of see he's held himself back from the rest of the straight line ever so slightly. He's probably about half a yard behind everyone else. And also then circled, I have Gavin Coombs and I have Kenyon Knox, who are going to be very, very important in the next phase of play. So they are just kind of bracing themselves. They're going to be ready to commit. Yeah, the arrow is on Byrne. He's holding back. And we're going to look at Gavin Coombs and Kenyon Knox. They're braced for impact. So if we run on to our next clip, so we can see what has happened here is, what Haley is doing is, Haley comes up at the front of the lineup. They're just throwing up, you know, they're throwing him up. What he's doing is he's popping the ball back down to Tadhg Byrne, who has deliberately stepped back half a yard to make sure that when that ball is popped down, it's popped backwards rather than forwards. And then also the two guys we mentioned, Kenyon Knox and Gavin Coombs, you can see the way that they've moved their body positions, that they're getting tighter in towards Tadhg Byrne. They're moving in and, you know, they're maintaining their position to be facing towards the goal, because what they're doing here is they're basically going to set up a maul separate to where they would have won the lineout. So he's popping it down to Tadhg Byrne, and that's the point that they're going to set the maul up in. And if we roll on to our next clip, we can see the way they've set it up. That's the yellow circle is the moment the ball hits Tadhg Byrne's hands. Gavin Coombs and Kenyon Knox have latched on really well and really tight to him. They've got a really, really good tight bind, and they're setting up this maul. And if we go on to our next slide, we can see there, that's how it's all set up. It's all safe and well. Yellow circle is the back of the maul where Niall Scannell has the ball safely. And then if we look at the three red arrows, this is Leinster pretty much trying to do exactly what we would have seen Munster doing in the last clip, where they're trying to send that maul to go back out towards the touchline and, you know, close off the space for them. So they're kind of pushing their bodies. They're putting the bodies, I should say, out onto the far side of this maul, because they want to put all the weight on that side to push it back in. So we can roll it on again. But we can see that the base that Munster had actually setting up was obviously too strong. A better balance than Leinster. If we remember how Ryan Baird got split, for example, these three Munster players these two Munster players were tight in on Tadhg Byrne to set up that maul. So it means the weight is evenly distributed, the balance is evenly distributed, and it means that as well as Leinster were attempting to kind of send that maul out towards the touchline, they weren't able to do it. And what ended up happening is four of these Leinster players, they just slid out, like one player slips and they all kind of end up following. You know, it's like a domino effect, but four Leinster players end up sliding off the side of that maul. And as you can see, they're numbered 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, that is immediately four defending players from Amal out of the equation. And from there, they're pretty much goosed because Munster have, like, we're talking about seven on about three players when it comes to a rolling maul. If we go on to our next slide, what ends up happening then, it is, that's the red circle. That's Cormac Foley, who, the poor lad, he was only on the pitch 5 minutes for his Leinster debut. And he has to do it. He has to take one for the team and just bring that thing down and take his chances. He ends up getting caught, but he didn't really have much choice. It was a penalty try. He ended up getting a yellow card. And as you can see, it's 71 and a half minutes later. That's the end of his debut for the poor fella.
That's harsh. That is harsh. But look, you live and learn, and hopefully they're not killing him too much in the session this morning.
You know, to take one for the team.
Yeah.
Duty calls. You just had to do it.
That's fair enough. Speaking of which, Stuart Lancaster is actually going to join us live for Thursday morning's OTB AM, and we can put some of this stuff to him as well. Number three is confusion around the captain's challenge.
Yeah, so basically, this is Munster in the final few minutes of the game. They're attempting to challenge a collapsed maul late in the game, but they weren't allowed to. So it's the communication of the message that's confusing, and it's probably showed up an area of concern. So some of the language around the trial, basically, for this captain's challenge is what it seems like is just very much open for interpretation, and it's all a bit of a mess as far as I'm concerned. So if we look at our first clip, I'm just going to show you the incident very, very quick. It doesn't actually matter what happens, because it's more so down to what the referee calls and the communication of it that we're kind of concerned about. But I just want to show you what happens just for reference sake. So Munster moving along with a maul, Scott Fardy is circled. He's been told he's okay there. Don't change your bind, though. Maintain your bind. And if we go on to our second one, he does change his bind. He grabs onto the Munster player and pulls him down. It's not really relevant, though. I just wanted to paint the picture of why we were here. So the referee blew his whistle, scrum to Leinster because the maul had collapsed. It had been taken in by Munster, and the result was that it was ruled unplayable. Out. Munster thought that they had a case to challenge for a penalty, so Peter Amani asked to challenge it. We'll wait a couple of minutes before we go to our next slide. So I just want to explain. So it's in the final 5 minutes of this game. You can challenge anything except, broadly speaking, if the game is restarted, if the referee hasn't made a decision. So what I mean by that is if a ball is kicked out of play, you can't come to the referee and ask him to look for hands in the last ruck, for example. Or if you're talking about a set piece, such as a scrum or a line-out, where there are so many different interpretations that different people could make on, you know, different binds and things like that. So the referee and Peter Romani, this is their exchange. The referee says to him, you can't challenge a non-decision. You can only challenge a whistled decision. Romani says, but it's the last 5 minutes. The assistant referee says, you can't challenge a set piece at a line-out. This is the assistant referee. You can hear him speaking to his ref and reminding him that. Then O'Mahony says again, it's the last 5 minutes. You can challenge anything. The referee says, you can't challenge a non-decision. And that's, you know, that's the referee cutting them off. But you can interpret what they said in several ways. So if we look at our next little clip, this is a screen grab of the full detailed version of what you can and can't do with the captain's challenge, which was sent out by the Pro 14. What can be challenged? Says foul play in red. Says law. It says law 9-1 to 9-6 and 10-11 to 10-23. To be honest, which makes it even more confusing, I'm almost certain that that's a typo on the document, and it should say 9-1 to 6 and 9-11 to 23 rather than 10 to 23, because law 10 doesn't actually have that many subsections, and law 9-11 through 23 deals with dangerous play and stuff like that. Exactly what they should.
You have missed
about.
Your calling. You have absolutely. That is that's the type of analysis that everybody comes here for the Type 5. This law doesn't exist. Uh oh.
Some law firm CEO, somewhere. Neil Tracy.
There's an intern somewhere busily just clawing at their collar, going, "It's got hot all of a sudden. Tracy's on me."
So we'll go to our next clip here. So this is just the continued version of what you can and can't challenge. It says foul play again, and then any whistled decision. What can't be challenged is the next slot, the next part there down at the bottom, and it says non-decisions. So this is where the holes are emerging. So there's a few things to run through here. If we're talking about a non-decision, surely the decision that the ball was taken in and became unplayable is a decision. And logically, Munster would be challenging the call of, we brought the ball in and it became unplayable. So what Peter O'Mahony would be saying to the referee is that, you know, we believe that the mall was brought down illegally rather than just kind of came down of its natural volition. The next part is that you can't challenge a set piece, which is what it said in those rules. Now, the set piece is over as soon as the mall is formed. So a mall following a line out is not a set piece. But as we heard the assistant referee say to his referee, who then relayed it back to Peter O'Mahony, is that you can't challenge a mall or a line, or you can't challenge a scrum or a line out. But they weren't looking to challenge a line out. They were looking to challenge the mall that followed the line out. And at that point, the line out is over. Then also, you're talking about foul play. They reference foul play can kind of override these things. Now, collapsing a mall falls into law 920C, which falls into what they had mentioned in foul play. So straight off, collapsing a mall is foul play and could be challenged initially. On the flip side, though, what you would have to point out is that when you listen to the interaction, Peter O'Mahony probably should have made his points clearer as to what he was challenging and why he was challenging it. Like, he kind of just went with the, oh, it's the last 5 minutes, we can challenge anything.
Rule 923, law,
them all, foul play, you know, we're allowed to do that. It probably just needed to be a lot clearer from both sides. And to be honest, when I was looking through those, the various what you can and can't challenge on that big document yesterday, there's a lot in it. There's a lot of stuff that contradicts with each other. And it just seemed like a bit of a mess for the referee to be working on.
Yeah. Isn't it good that they're finding out that it's a bit of a mess in the Rainbow Cup as opposed to in a European Cup or a Pro 14 final or a Top 14 final or a Under 20 World Cup final? So maybe that's exactly what kind of made up tournaments at the end of the season is for. So look, we're nearly out of time, but we've got time to do Connacht Clever Attack.
Yeah, we'll get through this one very quickly. This is a small little one. It's just a lovely little example of them exposing the fringes of the Ulster defence on Friday night. So it's a bit of bad defensive work from Ulster, but very alert, instinctive stuff from Ulster as well. So our first clip starts off with a scrum just inside the Ulster half of the field. Abraham Papali, the Connacht number 8, holding the ball in one hand as well, as those Pacific Island players love to do. We call it walking the dog. Don't try it at home, though, because it'll just turn out disastrously. If we go on to our second clip, we can see Billy Burns has attempted to make a tackle, and basically he's speed bumped for big Abraham Papali. He has run over him. He has sat him down. And like, I'm not just pointing it out for the sake of it. This is relevant to give us an idea of how Billy Burns is going to be scrambling back into the defensive line in just a second. Our next clip, Papali is finally brought to the ground. He's gained a good bit of, you know, he's gained a fine chunk of meters there. We can see on the far side of the ruck, that's Billy Burns scrambling back in to make himself the pillar on the far side of the ruck. On the near side, though, that's Matty Ray, the Ulster flanker. So he has kind of come across, he has jogged across, and he's trying to spread out and fill a gap in the defensive line. And you can see him, he's trying to call other players to come in to fill that slot at pillar on the near side of the ruck, but nobody comes across to follow him. Like, Billy Burns is obviously, he's been absolutely leathered in a tackle, and he's just getting back into the first spot he can probably find. He's probably a little bit rattled with his self-esteem, and he just wants to get back into position. One of those Ulster players probably needs to be coming across, or at the very least, Matty Ray needs to realise they're not coming across, and he needs to put himself back in closer to that ruck. But he's created a big gap, and if we roll it on to our next clip, we can see Quaylen Blade doesn't need to be asked twice. He, as soon as he sees it, he's picking up that ball and he is darting straight through it. And still has a lot of work to do. Ends up sidestepping Robert Balakoon brilliantly and gets over for an absolutely cracking score. But like, that was some poor defensive work from Ulster. And about 10 minutes later, a very, very similar thing happened again, which Connacht exposed. And we can look at Connacht try number five here. Yeah, so what's happening here is, this is just a ruck setup. You can see John Andrew is up out of the defensive line for Ulster. He's trying to come back into the defensive line because he's just made a tackle. But what we're going to look at is the ruck. We've got Sean Reedy, who is the number 2 above him, the yellow number 2. He's our pillar on the near side. John Cooney spots that there's no pillar on the far side of the ruck. So again, they've left themselves without a pillar. John Cooney, as we can see, is number 1. And he's going to drift over to the right to try fill that gap. Initially, he was standing directly behind the ruck, but he's going to go over to the right and fill that gap on the far side. The ball is there, as we can see as well, circled in red, and Quaylen Blade has his hand on, like pretty much has his hand on it, ready to pass it. But just at the last second before he passes it, our man, Abraham Papali'i, is going to pick it up very quickly. And as he sees John Cooney stepping out towards the right, he realises there's no cover behind the ruck. And he just picks it up and runs straight through. And if we look at it again in the next clip, this is from the behind the goal shot. You can see John Cooney where he's standing initially, like he is where he normally would be, behind that ruck. But he realises that Ulster don't have a pillar on the right side of the ruck. They don't have anyone covering the fringes there. So he needs to step over and cover. And if we go through to our next one, we can see that moment, that's the hole it creates, and Papali'i goes through. He ends up getting tackled about 6-7 meters later, and in the end it comes to nothing, but it could have come to something, and it could have been a very, very important part in that game. But Ulster cannot repeat those same mistakes this Friday against Leicester, because interestingly enough, when Leicester and Connacht met in the last 16 of the competition last month, both sides actually scored one of these exact tries each. So Connacht ended up running straight through a Leicester ruck when there was nobody guarding the fringes. The Tigers did the exact same thing to Connacht later on in the game. So emerging through that ruck, it's in the arsenal of both of these teams. Ulster have to be wary of it.
All right, really looking forward to that. Neil, that was brilliant. Unfortunately, we don't have time for the beefy La Rochelle pack today, but we'll definitely do it later on in the week because everybody's very interested in that game and how it's going to go this weekend. But that is this week's Tight 5/Tight 4. Brilliant work from Neil, and I'm sure the Boffins, who are responsible for writing the laws of rugby, will be keeping an eye on that and making some changes. OTBAM is brought to you every morning from 7:30 in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Give me the confidence to tackle the day ahead.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.